Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 20th of October. All things political this hour with John McCormick, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. 14 days until the midterm elections, and that's where we'll be spending the bulk of our time this hour. John spent a good chunk of time in Wisconsin at the end of August covering the Wisconsin gubernatorial campaign, and he wrote, "If Walker wins his third gubernatorial election in Wisconsin, he will be well-positioned to be a serious contender for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. He's admired by both the Republican base and the donor class for his fight against public employee unions and hasn't angered any particular faction of the GOP yet." Today's New York Times had a front page story on this race and said that Walker's day job is not all that is at stake. His currency as a presidential contender will surely vanish if he cannot win a second term as governor of Wisconsin. We'll talk about how the campaign is shaping up, a little bit about the debate on Friday night that we carried here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Will Democrats show up in November? The president is saying Democrats have a congenital problem, unwillingness to turn out in midterm elections as they do in presidential years. And the president's approval rating is very low, 40%, the lowest level in that survey from the Washington Post ABC News poll since the beginning of his presidency. We'll look at the various crises, conflict in Iraq and Syria, protests in Ferguson, the Ebola virus in West Africa and the United States, and how this may affect the midterm elections. So that's just a little bit of what we'll be covering this hour. And you, as always, are welcome to join our conversation. Call-in number today, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Interested in hearing from those of you who watched or listened to the debate, gubernatorial debate on Friday, what you thought of that debate and how the campaign is going. John, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be here.
When you were in Wisconsin in August, was it, covering this campaign?
Yeah, mostly in August. I spent some time on the trail, followed Scott Walker, governor, to a few different campaign events, the state fair, some business meetings. I spent some time watching Mary Burke address a local chamber of commerce in Manitowoc. And, I spent some time with the candidates. It was a good time.
Good. The New York Times, I'm sure you saw today's front page story, saying Walker's day job is not all that's at stake. His currency as a presidential contender will surely vanish if he can't win a second term as governor of this state. Would you agree with that, John?
Certainly. If he loses, I don't think there's a chance that he'll run for president. There are very rare instances where someone can use a losing election as a springboard to the presidency. The last one that comes to mind is Abraham Lincoln in 1860 after he lost the Senate race in Illinois in 1858. But I really can't think of any other good examples. I mean, Nixon lost the presidential election in 60, came back again in 72, but just from losing a gubernatorial election doesn't really seem like a good jumping-off point to run for president.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of where it stands right now? It couldn't be closer, according to polls, if you believe them. 47-47.
Yeah, 47-47, that's the average. That's what Marquette had in their latest poll, and they've had a very good track record recently. If you look at the average of polls, some people like to do that to account for variance in the different polls, and they're showing, Walker 47-7 and Mary Burke 47.4, so less than a point. I haven't looked closely at the governor's races, but if you take a look at the Senate races, when the polls are less than 3 points apart, it can really swing either way. So even if on Election Day Walker's up by one or two or Mary Burke's up by one or two, I wouldn't take too much faith in those polls. I would still regard the race as a toss-up either way.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think of the campaign strategy of both Walker and Burke?
It's interesting. It's kind of a play it safe strategy by both campaigns. They had this huge fight in Wisconsin over, public sector unions, collective bargaining, reductions to benefits, for pensions and health care for some teachers, public school teachers. But that's completely almost faded away. Mary Burke, she never really tried to talk about that issue. She's focused relentlessly on, Walker's jobs promise that he would, that 250,000 new jobs jobs would be created. And Walker himself really hasn't brought up, you know, he's tried to bring up the, you know, pointing to the successes, budgetary successes in various school districts. But, you know, both candidates are playing it pretty safe. I thought Friday night's debate was, didn't really make a lot of news. They both were candidates were poised. On point, they had their talking points down, focused mainly on jobs and the economy, and they made their arguments. But I didn't think there was any, you know, really newsy developments out of that. It was all things that we had kind of heard before.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of dull, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you explain, this state has such an interesting history, so I'm always interested in finding out from political experts like you, how can this state elect people who are completely opposite politically? How can we have a Tammy Baldwin and a Ron Johnson?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know what, I mean, that's the multi-billion-dollar question in American politics. You know, who are the swing voters and why do they swing? I mean, Walker himself talks about the Obama-Walker voters, and his conception of these voters are people who, you know, they're a little bit burned by politics. They don't really trust, they don't trust either party. They kind of trust people who can get things done. Walker, to me, said he thinks they even see some similarities between how, you know, someone might have voted for President Obama in 2012, thinking, well, Mitt Romney just presented a negative attack on him, didn't really explain how they would make things better for him. And so Walker kind of sees himself in the same way that, you know, Mary Burke is out there criticizing Walker for failing to, you know, meet this 250,000 jobs pledge, just as President Obama failed to meet his, you know, goals for what he wanted to get the unemployment rate down to. But Walker says, you know, I did my bold reforms, and she hasn't presented any agenda to actually make the lives of people better. I mean, when I sat through her meeting at the Chamber of Commerce, the only real things I heard her talk about were raising the minimum wage, which is very popular, and to make it easier to sue for employment discrimination on the basis of gender, which is already illegal, but would somehow make it easier to do. So not really a lot of actual, no real legislative proposals to get the economy running. A lot of talk about, you know, corporate speak about leveraging and, you know, using innovation. And this is all, sounds great, but there's not really a lot of meat on the bones there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Stating the obvious, of course, it will all depend on turnout. And the president has said over the weekend, as he resumed a little bit of campaigning, he's not welcome in many places, but saying that Democrats have this congenital problem, an unwillingness to turn out in midterm elections as they do in presidential years. That's true, isn't it?
It certainly has happened. I think people sometimes overstate Wisconsin as simply a, you know, well, in midterms, Republicans do well, and in presidential elections, Democrats do well.
Right.
I mean, Jim Doyle won in a midterm year in 2006 when there was no presidential race on the ballot. He won in 2002 when Jim Doyle, a Democrat, when Republicans had a great year nationally. So Wisconsin's an interestingly swingy state. I think it's polarized, but there's that still that 5-7% that swings. I mean, when Scott Walker won the recall by 7 points in June of 2012, the exit polls show that the same people who supported Scott Walker by 7 points preferred President Obama by 7 points. You flash forward to November of 2012, and what did President Obama win by? 7 points. So, you know, there's that group of people who are for Walker and Obama, and trying to figure out who exactly they are is interesting. You know, one thing I've seen, this is more of a national point, is that one number that's determined basically every election, I forget how far back it goes, but Molly Ball, a writer at The Atlantic, talked to a union official who pointed out whether, you know, Republicans, if they lose voters in the working class that's making below, I believe, $50,000 a year, or is it 75, I don't recall, if they lose by 10 points, they win. If they lose by 20 points, Republicans lose. So it's that working class vote that shifts. It can swing back and forth. And I really don't know how they'll swing in Wisconsin this year. I think it's a, you know, really interesting race. And I would say that one question I have is how many people voted against the recall in 2012, not because they necessarily supported Walker, but because they opposed the whole idea of a recall. I personally know two or three people, friends and family back in Wisconsin like that, will probably be voting for Mary Burke right now.
Yeah, because they didn't think it was fair.
Didn't like the recall, yeah.
Right.
Get a chance to work. Might have not been huge fans of Walker, voted for him in the first place, but didn't like the recall.
Yeah. So when do you look very, very carefully at polls? We've had, ups and downs for both candidates. Are you looking at a couple days before that would be tremendously accurate?
Yeah, I think, you got to wait until the polls have sort of settled out till the end. And I've gone and looked back on what the polls showed in election and the average of polls. And like I said, in the Senate races, in 2006 and 2004, there were 7 close Senate races, less than 3 points. The polls you know, the person who was up on election day won in 6 out of 7 of those close races in Senate races. But if you go to 2008, 2012, and 2010, you look at the close races there, and the polls really weren't that helpful. There were 5 misses. North Dakota and Montana in 2012, Minnesota with Al Franken, he was down almost 3 points on election day, you know, pulled off a squeaker during the recount. And then in 2010, Colorado and Nevada, those both had the Democrats down by nearly, he was down 3 points in Colorado, won by 1 point. That was Michael Bennett in Colorado. And then Harry Reid, the majority leader, he was down by about 2.6 points, and he ended up pulling off a 5.6-point victory. So that was a huge – the polls really missed in Nevada. So I think people have gotten a little too comfortable just because the polls happened to be right during the 2012 presidential election, pretty good during the 2008 presidential election. You know, that polling is not an exact science. There's still margin of error there.
Not that this will have a huge bearing, although you may think it will, on the gubernatorial race in Wisconsin. We do have a president who has very low approval ratings, 40%, and we have all this that's going on in the world, this Ebola virus in West Africa, which has been made a political thing in this country. We've got Iraq and Syria and the fight against ISIS, which is not going very well. We've got the Ferguson protests in Ferguson and in St. Louis. What does all of that do to politics? I have to believe it does something to these races.
Definitely, it does. Sean Trendy at Real Clear Politics, he's a very smart elections and polling analyst, and he wrote a piece a ways back, actually, you know, back in early in 2014, pointing out how the president's job approval correlates to election outcomes. And he looked at 31 close Senate races in the past couple election cycles, and what he found was that in 3/4 of those races, the Senate candidate never did better than 5 points better than the president's approval rating in that state.
Really?
And no one did better than 10 points above the president's approval rating. So it's a really hard lift. You know, if the president's approval rating is at, say, you know, 42 in a state, there's still a chance, but it's, you know, the odds are that candidate's not going to get above, you know, 47%. He'll have a real tough time getting to 50, 51, 52. I think maybe in gubernatorial elections, I haven't looked that close there. I do think that the president, the last time I checked in the Marquette poll, he seemed to be hovering around, you know, 44. So definitely, you know, reasonable for Mary Burke to outperform him by 5-6 points and get to 50% and win that thing. So I guess it just depends on how things, you know, shake out more closer to election day in the state.
John McCormick is our guest, and you are listening to All Things Political, which you always hear on Monday. It's 2 weeks tomorrow, the midterm elections, and so understandably we're spending quite a bit of time on those elections. Front and center, the gubernatorial race here in the state of Wisconsin. We all had a chance to see another debate. There will not be other debates. This was the second of two between the two candidates. John spent, as you heard him describe, quite a bit of time in Wisconsin at the end of August covering both campaigns, and he's got his eye on these campaigns. So what did you think of that debate? What do you think about that race? What do you think about all of these crises coming at the same time and what it does to the elections, the chances of Republicans winning the Senate? Is it stronger because of Ebola and the fight against ISIS and protests in Ferguson? It's been a fairly tumultuous time. We'd love to hear from you, and here's how we can hear from you. Call us at 1-800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter. John is senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and we'll be with you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All Things Political right now, 800-486-8655 is our number. And Frank in Onalaska, our first caller. Hi, Frank. Hello, Frank. Call us back, Frank. I don't know where you are. John in Green Bay. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning or good afternoon. See, the question I have is the idea to me that Scott Walker could possibly be the president of our country seems so far out of the realm of anything that would make sense to me. And I'm just wondering what criteria is used when people actually make that statement that he would be a viable presidential candidate. Because I'm trying to be impartial. I just don't even see a remote possibility that he could be an effective president of our country.
John.
I think people would say from a political perspective that, you know, Walker has, if he wins election three times in a Democratic state, he implemented a bold conservative reform agenda that I would argue has succeeded in balancing local school districts' budgets without resorting to have to fire teachers or cut programs or hurt kids. I think that's an impressive agenda. Obviously, he has downsides. The clearest, I would think, is that he's not an exceptionally inspiring speaker. You know, people sometimes they want a workhorse, not a show horse. But I do think at the presidential level, people do want to be inspired. They do want someone who's charismatic, and you know, Walker isn't known for that. I've even kind of posed that hypothetically, not directly about him, but I said, you know, he's argued that the 2016 presidential race can't be about personalities. It has to be about ideas and issues. And I said, but isn't it true that the more charismatic candidate almost always wins the presidential level? Just think back, you know, President Obama in his two elections, he was a more charismatic candidate. I would argue George Bush was even slightly more charismatic than Gore and Kerry, and he won those elections. Bill Clinton obviously had the charisma advantage, Ronald Reagan. So I don't know if there's a pattern there or not, but what he said was, listen, charisma is about a lot more than just giving a nice speech. It's about, you know, being bold and believing in what you say and doing what you said you're going to do. So I think that, you know, he hasn't said anything directly. This is all just speculation so far, but I think he would be in a pretty good position to run. He's got a lot of downsides. You know, I don't know how the factor that he ended up a few credits short from Marquette with a degree I'm sure that would be a minor campaign issue, but there have been plenty of people like Bill Gates who have graduated, and many other Americans who have just gone to some college and gotten a job like Walker did without finishing. So I don't know. There will be a lot of time to debate this if Scott Walker wins, and that is definitely not a sure thing right now with the race being a toss-up.
Let's spend just a few more moments on the issue of education. Some would probably take issue with you that public education has suffered. There have been cutbacks, certainly, by the administration, and also this issue of an expansion of charter and voucher schools in the state of Wisconsin. I was interested in hearing a story recently from Kansas, I believe, is where it was, where there was this has become a huge issue in that state because a lot of rural districts have been closing. Do you anticipate... people have wildly different ideas about the state of education and the direction of education, that it would become a large issue in a presidential campaign? And is it a large issue, do you think, in the gubernatorial campaign or not?
Well, I'm surprised by how little has been brought up. I asked back in 2012, a week before the recall, about Act 10, I asked Tom Barrett directly, can you name me any schools that have been hurt by Walker's reforms? He couldn't answer the question. I asked him three times. He said his campaign staff would get back to me. They never got back to me. I put the same question to Mary Burke after a campaign event. I said, Ms. Burke, are there any schools that you can specifically point to that have been hurt by Act 10? And she told a story about the Neenah School District. And she said that in Neenah, she was told a story by a man there whose daughter recently graduated from UW-Eau Claire. She was offered a job at Neenah and a job in Minnesota. Guess which job she was taking, Mary Burke said, implying that she went to Minnesota because Neenah had been hurt by Act 10. I called up the Neenah School District, and what do I find? But after Act 10, they've raised the starting pay for teachers by $6,000 from $34,000 to $40,000. They haven't had to fire a single teacher, which they had to do for budgetary reasons beforehand. They made some adjustments to the health care plan where there was, I forget the specifics right now. You can go to my article on weeklystandard.com, Neenah, Google that, and you'll find it. And he said things like, I'm sure that the copay was changed a little bit. But Mary Burke says she supports those things. Mary Burke says she supports making teachers pay that 5% of their salary towards their pension. She says she supports the 12% paying for their premiums. So just from a political level, I don't deny that there's got to be some school district that's been hurt by Walker's reforms. But I don't think the Democrats want to talk about that because I think, in general, Walker's plan has succeeded. The sky hasn't fallen. And if they could point to, you know, children getting a terrible education in Wisconsin and kids being hurt and teachers being fired left and right, I think that would be front and center. And the fact that they can't is either proof that Walker's reforms are working, or it's proof that the Democrats are just completely practicing political malpractice here.
I would agree with you. It hasn't been made a very big issue, but it's also true that funds were cut to public education by a substantial amount by administration, so it has to have an effect on school districts.
Walker says we cut these funds and we let them buy, you know, you got rid of the union health care plan and you replaced it with, I mean, you could go out and bid on the market. And so you could do these things without the alternative. When you have a budget crisis, the old way was that the teachers' unions would say, okay, we're going to keep exactly the benefits we have, and you can go ahead and fire 20 teachers, which in turn hurts the students. And they just wouldn't. I mean, I did this in a piece. I talked to another Obama Walker voter who was on the school district in Brown Deer, and she would talk about, you know, these modest cuts that Mary Burke says she supports, that the union said they supported on the pensions and the health care. She's like, listen, as long as collective bargaining remained in place, that was their veto power. That let them stop this. And we could never have made these adjustments that would have kept everybody on the payroll and, you know, kept things running. So, I mean, yeah, there were cuts made, but those were, they made up for it by making these adjustments. So, I mean, could things get worse? Certainly. I think that, you know, we'll see how the next budget rolls up. But I think to date, Democrats would be howling if they could point to school districts that were hurt. And the fact that Mary Burke and Tom Barrett haven't been able to do so is a sign to me that things are hurt.
Well, you may hear from some of those school districts on this show. You never know.
They need to call Mary Burke, too.
Thanks, John, very much for your call. Frank is with us now in Onalaska. Hi, Frank.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. So your earlier question about why do we end up with the kind of politics that we have in Wisconsin, I'm going to give you two examples where the media, with the exception of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Television, is lazy and ineffective. First, on the second debate Friday night, the only TV station that covered it live was Wisconsin Public Television. The three local lacrosse area TV stations didn't, you know, stayed with their normal broadcasting yet. Rake in millions of dollars in the campaign advertising from all the candidates. So they're lazy in that regard and only chase the dollar. The second example, when both parties, both candidates, make public appearances, it's usually in the very canned photo op opportunity where the candidate provides a soundbite and some video for the broadcast on TV. It's usually in the case of the example of both, but the governor appears at a lot of local businesses, is asked a few questions, but you can bet that the employee is never going to ask a serious question to the governor for fear of losing their job. So what we get is a canned presentation through the negative ads, and the media never really gets into the heart of the matter of the issues.
John?
I would just say that in general, that there really has been a push by the candidates to be very disciplined, to not talk to the media,
right,
to very canned events. From my experience in Wisconsin, though, I would say I was impressed with Walker and somewhat with Burke that they were willing to talk to the media. Walker, you know, he must have been doing a couple, you know, maybe in the course of a week, he probably did maybe 10 events at that week. And after every single one, he gave a 10-minute press conference. Now, and if you go on any other Senate race, governor's race, I haven't experienced that kind of openness from a candidate. So I would commend Walker. Burke also, she only held one event the week that I was there. So obviously, it was playing a strategy to kind of stay out of the headlines too much, be the, you know, I'm not Scott Walker, kind of position herself as a moderate. She doesn't want to have too many flubs out there. But she was willing to take questions from all comers. You know, that's when I asked her my question about, you know, which school districts are hurt. I also asked her if she would consider raising taxes. She said that she disagreed with the property tax cap, but she'd worked to find a reasonable level, so she wouldn't say that. And then after she found out that I was with the Weekly Standard, which is a conservative publication, she kind of stopped talking to me. I asked her, you know, she's made abortion an issue in this race. And Scott Walker's, you know, really bad on this issue and extremist. And I said, well, do you support, you know, public funding for abortion through the health care exchanges, a.k.a. Obamacare, or Medicaid? And she just wouldn't answer those questions at that point. So I haven't been on the trail much with Burke besides that one event. But I was impressed that the candidates were at least willing to take some questions. That's more than you get from a lot of campaigns.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was only run on public television in La Crosse. That was different. Not all the commercial stations in Milwaukee ran the debate, but several did do that. And, yeah, that seems to me to be serving in the public interest. Television stations in an important race like that, should all the stations should be covering the debate.
Certainly, and I don't know about that either. I was unaware that it was.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I mean, who knows? So,
right.
Yeah, I think that, especially when there's only two debates in a
right.
statewide election, that they should be on all the stations.
I agree. Thank you, Frank, for the call. Jimmy on Facebook says, oh, wait a second, we can't read. Oh, I can't read all this. We'll have to go back to it. The screen just got smaller for some reason. I pressed the wrong button, so we'll get it fixed here. Oh, now we did. Thank you very much, KP. Jimmy on Facebook wonders this. Why isn't Mary Burke. Oh, now it just did something else. I'm sorry. We'll go to this. I'm sorry. Let's go back to phone calls. John in Eau Claire is next. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, John.
I have a question that's about earlier in the program. I noticed there's a lot of references to these polls and how they're 47 points each and one's up by 0.4 or whatever. I want to know, how much influence does actually reporting these numbers change the way people will vote? Because it's, if someone's up by 10 points reportedly, will someone that's on the line say, well, I only want to vote for who's winning, and then instead of voting for who they like, vote for who's winning, who's reported as winning?
Yeah, does that happen? I can't imagine doing that. But
you know, I'm sure there are some great studies out there, and I'm not going to pretend that I have them off the top of my head. But I do think it does make sense that on the margins, you know, if theoretically the polls showed that, you know, for example, there was a governor's race in Virginia recently in 2013, and it showed the Republican losing by 8 points or something on Election Day. He ended up only losing by 2 points. Now, did the fact that he was losing by 8 points on Election Day in the polls, did that discourage some voters? I'm sure it did. I'm sure if people thought the election was a 2-point race, you would have had every, you know, last Republican going out there. And I'm sure the people at the margins who are a little bit busy, they might not go out. And when they show the race at 47-47, you got to think anyone who has a preference in this race is going to go out because they think that their vote matters more. But I don't know, you know, is it really decisive? I can't imagine that it's going to, you know, do more than a, you know, maybe less than one percentage point. But again, a lot of races are decided by less than one percentage point, too. So I think it has an effect. I haven't seen any good studies on how you quantify and how you would even do a study on that. You know, you can't really experiment with that, you know, in some lab setting. So I don't know how that affects voters' behavior, but that's a good question.
Thank you, John, for the call. Now we go to Jimmy on Facebook, who writes, why isn't Mary Burke resonating with Wisconsin voters? By all appearances, Governor Walker should be an easy target. But for whatever reason, Ms. Burke just doesn't seem to be gaining the ground in the polls that she should be at this point in the race. It is tied, though. We should make mention of that. She seems to hold all of the right positions that should be very popular with working Wisconsinites, but it doesn't appear as though she can fire up her own base, and she's falling flat with young voters and independent voters as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure that she can't fire up the base. I mean, I think the base in Wisconsin is fired up just by the idea that someone can beat Scott Walker. And so while she has, you know, tried to make herself seem more moderate by, for instance, supporting making teachers pay that 5% of their pension and the health care benefits, the health care premiums, she's called herself, quote-unquote, a fiscal conservative. So I think she's trying to, you know, hopefully hold the base who will be happy just with the idea of beating Scott Walker while, you know, making some rhetorical gestures to the center. So I don't know. I think that she could turn out the base on Election Day. I would say that, you know, her presentation, yeah, I wouldn't say there's a lot of, you know, bold agenda. How is she going to do things differently than Scott Walker? Her main argument is, I'm not Scott Walker, and maybe that'll be enough. You know, she definitely has a pleasant enough personality. She's fairly poised speaker. And whether that's enough to beat Walker, it could.
Mm-hmm. It is the issue, because where I'd say 90% of the campaigning is, it's on economic issues. It's on the promise of 250,000 jobs. It's on the minimum wage in the state. They differ on those issues. It's on how to create jobs. It's on her plan, which was taken from other states' plans, charges of plagiarism here. But that seems to be the substance of the conversation in the state of Wisconsin. Is that because it's what most people are thinking about?
You know, I think it does matter, but you got to think of this in the larger context of the national debate. I mean, the national debate, it hasn't been simply about, you know, jobs numbers. And I think that Walker may have made a mistake in, you know, making that firm pledge, because, you know, the state of Wisconsin can only, you know, create so many jobs as people, you know, and national factors play a big role in how many jobs are created in a state. I think the government in general, you know, only plays a marginal role in, you know, how much the private sector is creating jobs. Where the government has real power is in taxing and spending and passing regulations. So things like, you know, Walker's, you know, budget cuts and how he balanced the budget. I mean, Mary Burke hasn't laid out how she would have balanced the budget differently, for example. I think that those are tools the government has to spur job creation. And what has Mary Burke said? She's just gone for the very popular things like the minimum wage, which you can think that's a good idea or a bad idea, but it's not exactly going to create more jobs. It might create a few better-paying jobs while creating fewer minimum wage jobs, because people will just end up hiring fewer people at the minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. Mike in Prairie du Sac. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, Mike. How are you?
Great.
Good.
Well, obviously, it's all about politics. Getting rid of Walker is the agenda for most people. And what I think he's doing for Wisconsin is just great. It's going in the right direction. The only thing standing in his way is a five-letter word, Obama. As far as Mary Burke is concerned, if you don't learn from your mistakes of the past, you're doomed to repeat them. Obama's resume wasn't very thick. Tom Brokaw said that when he said we didn't know much about him. And hers is even less thick. She didn't work for her father all that long, twice. And she worked for a short time with the Doyle administration as a commerce secretary. Isn't that somebody that's supposed to be have something to do with jobs? It seems that Doyle lost 136,000 jobs. So her resume isn't very thick. And I think we're doomed if we vote her in. So that's all I got to say.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for your call. John?
Mary Burke's resume has definitely been an issue. I think that Walker, people were a little surprised to some degree that he sort of played that against her. It's normally someone like Mitt Romney whose involvement in business and shipping jobs overseas or destroying this business is the issue. But, Walker tried that early. To bring up the fact that Trek Bicycles had shipped a lot of jobs overseas where the wage is $2 an hour while she's calling to raise the minimum wage to $10 an hour in Wisconsin. That's definitely, if resumes are in fair game, then I think the fact that she, worked at her father's corporation as a multimillionaire, whether people think that's a good experience and moreover her work for Jim Doyle, that'll be a factor. I just think the issue of the plagiarized jobs plan, the allegations of that, which, she's said, parts of it were copied, and she blamed that on the consultants. That's probably the bigger issue, and I just, again, don't see any real substantive plans when you even go and look into that.
Yeah. I wonder about the Republican strategy of playing that up. I'm not sure that resonates with Wisconsin voters. I could be very wrong on this, but it would seem to me that a lot of people think, plans come from all kinds of places. They're running an effective ad where she tries to explain what plagiarism is, but I'm not sure that issue. And I'm wondering who decides what the issues are going to be in the incessant flow of very negative ads on both sides.
I think that's the campaign consultants what degree it's the campaign consultants and the campaign managers and the candidates themselves who decide that. Basically what I've seen is a pretty cautious campaign from both sides.
Right.
Pretty much, paint by numbers.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting because their ideas about things are very different. And certainly the political debate in this state has been a rousing debate for years now.
That's why I was surprised. The major reform was not front and center. I would have imagined if you said 3 years ago, you said, what will the 2014 election be about? And anybody would have automatically said, well, it's going to be about the protests in Madison, the cuts to schools, how Walker balanced the budget. People who think that was fiscal discipline, those who think that it was unfair to teachers.
Right.
But I guess that, Democrats they feel like they lost that debate in 2012, and, they don't want to litigate that again, and they just want to take out Walker and hope for the best. Mary Burke hasn't even said, how she's probably going to have a Republican legislature in 2015 if she's the governor. How are you going to work with them? What can you actually accomplish as a governor once these laws are already on the books? It's very difficult to repeal these things without the legislature and the governorship.
Rick in Eau Claire, hi. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, Greg.
Greg?
This is Greg.
All right, Greg. Hi, Greg.
Yeah. I just wanted to respond a little bit to the guy that was bashing Obama. But you go back to Dick Cheney and George Bush, how many jobs they lost, and these Republicans are blaming Doyle for the loss of jobs. Doyle was on his way back to recovering everything when Walker took over, and they don't see that. But then they'll take advantage of the numbers for themselves. That just doesn't make any sense to me, how they can lie like that, which is why I believe Walker was expelled or was going to be expelled from college, was for lying and cheating.
Well, we don't know the real, nobody's been able to come up with a firm story on that. What do you think of the strategy of using the not very popular Democratic governor prior to Walker?
You know, I think that, if she's going to, try and, I think both campaigns are, throwing these jobs, if you're going to, Walker's effectively saying, if you're going to blame me for not being able to meet my goal, there's a national recession in 2008, and I personally, I'm a conservative, I wouldn't blame Jim Doyle for that. There's been a very, very slow recovery, one of the slowest recoveries in the history of the United States of America under President Obama, and so the jobs in Wisconsin aren't as good as Walker had hoped they'd be. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I know that both campaigns have debated where Wisconsin stands relative to Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, and Iowa, and it all depends, again, on what year do you start counting job creation, what year do you start, doing all this stuff. So, in general, I think, like I said, I think the more relevant debate, the real difference is how would you have balanced the budget? That's what, the government can decide is taxes and spending and regulations and whether they can create an environment that's favorable for private sector job growth. I don't think that happens lickety-split. It takes some time for these tax policies, these spending policies, to have a positive or a negative effect. And, the loss of jobs in 2008 was largely because of a national huge recession, the housing bubble that was not caused by Jim Doyle, and the slower growth than anticipated by Scott Walker was not caused by Scott Walker. It was largely because of a national economic environmental factors. And so both campaigns are having this debate about who's creating jobs, and I don't know. I personally don't see that immediate impact from anyone at the state level. It can certainly have an impact. I'm not saying, jobs flee different states all the time. They can go to Illinois, they can go to Minnesota. So it does matter. But I think that, this broad brushstroke blaming, 133,000 on Doyle or Walker falling 150,000 short of his goal of 250, I don't quite see that argument. Maybe some people do, but I think it's a little overblown.
Thank you very much, Rick, for the call. More phone calls in a moment. John McCormick is our guest for All Things Political today. He's a senior writer for the Weekly Standard, which is a conservative publication. As you can tell, he's really keyed in on the Wisconsin gubernatorial race. He spent time here mostly with the Walker campaign, but also interviewed Mary Burke. So we're talking about that. I want to ask him about the voter ID and the Supreme Court stepping in so that voter ID won't be an issue in Wisconsin for the midterm elections, but I want his opinion on the Texas voter ID as well, and voter ID at play in other states. What impact will it have in the state of Wisconsin? And here's how you reach our conversation. We're all filled with phones humming right now, but eventually you can get through. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, we will be speaking with a health and sports psychologist at the University of Wisconsin Health School of Medicine and Public Health on practical tips on how to go beyond the idea of a work-life balance. Back to phone calls. Lori in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Hi, this is Lori. I just had a comment about how they've raised beginning teacher salaries in our school districts. That may be true, but then to grow after that, there is not much room for growth at all. I'm a retired teacher. I just retired this year, but we had an excellent teacher in our district who was hired before they raised the beginning teacher wage, and she was stuck down there. She was making less than beginning teacher, and to go for master's courses, she just couldn't even afford that. So she ended up leaving our state and taking a job elsewhere. And I think that's the big thing, that there's just not room for, you're not going to attract quality people in the future. I don't think you'll see it now, but I think you're going to see it down the road.
John.
I mean, I would have to, you know, take a look before I could comment on the specific situation. You know, you never know until you really dig in. But the only school district that Mary Burke has ever brought up was Neenah. And when I called them and asked about, you know, that was her whole point, is that you're not going to have quality teachers here. And I care very much about that. I'm a product of Wisconsin public schools. So are my three siblings. I benefited greatly. I'm very thankful. If it weren't for my public school teachers in Baldwin, Woodville, Wisconsin, I would not have the job I very much enjoy today. So I really do, as I'm a conservative, I do appreciate, I want good public schools in Wisconsin. I think that voters should too. But when I talked to the people in Neenah, you know, the school board member told me that they get about 200 applications for every single job. So I'd have to imagine that you can find still top quality people out of 200 job applications for a typical opening. I'm just going back over what he told me. He said that, you know, they reopened an elementary school that had been closed because of earlier budget cuts, budget constraints that had forced the district to lay off 10 to 12 teachers a year before Act 10, and how many teachers have they laid off since Walker's bill? Zero, he said, for budgetary reasons. The middle school has begun offering Chinese language courses. So, I mean, I've heard a lot of these stories, the positive stories, and, you know, I've asked Tom Barrett, I've asked Mary Burke to give me a really good example of Walker's reforms directly resulting in problems. I mean, obviously, there are going to be bad situations, you know, in a town where enrollment is declining, you're going to have less money and you're going to have problems there. But in terms of actually Act 10 causing these problems, you know, I don't know why. I mean, maybe the Democrats just don't want to make the argument for some reason, but the fact that they can't point to it, to me, is striking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suggest you come and look at Milwaukee Public Schools.
Well, that's the interesting thing. You know, in Milwaukee, you had all these teachers being fired because they had locked in their collective bargaining agreements before Act 10 took place. And so, I mean, listen, Milwaukee Public Schools are a much bigger problem than Act 10. You know, there's been people working for decades on this issue. So, but I do think, you know, if you look at collective bargaining in terms of, well, I mean, there was one teacher, and I think it was Wauwatosa, where she had won, like, a Teacher of the Year award the year before. And when the budget cuts came due, this is before Walker, she was the first to lose her job because of the, you know, last in, first out policy, where people with higher tenure are capped not based on how good they were, but just based on how many years they had on the clock. And I think by getting rid of that, you really do open up the, you know, the possibility to keep on more teachers by being able to make small adjustments to pay and benefits. Now, obviously, you know, there could come a point where, you know, well, what happens if there's another budget crisis? You know, there is a point at which you can cut too much, and then keeping good teachers does become an issue. But I, from what I've seen so far, I would argue that point has not yet hit.
Here's a Facebook comment from Jerry. Our Princeton school district is slated to receive 15.06 less school aid for 2014-15. Translate that into dollars, it's $57,723. That money would have covered the parking lot repair, $50,000. The district is floating a referendum for on the November 4th ballot.
Well, that's good. I mean, the people of Princeton want to spend that, if they need that $67,000 for that. I mean, I'd have to go and look directly here. I mean, is the $67,000, does that have anything to do? My understanding is that the state aid per student went up marginally, maybe $50 a student. I'm not sure if that was last year or the year before, after the initial cuts to balance the budget. But again, I'd have to look and see, is that because of declining enrollment? And furthermore, I think it's good that the people of Princeton can go out and vote. And if they want, you know, those repairs, and they're the ones closest to this. I think in my hometown, you know, we had a referendum on building a theater, you know, an auditorium, and I'm pretty sure it was approved back in, you know, I forget what, you know, early 2000s. And I'm glad that was for it. You know, I think that, you know, taxes and spending, you know, those decisions are best left up to people at the local level and referenda.
Jim in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, Ellie. I noticed even in the latest Marquette poll, there are still like 15% of the people that still don't know Mary Burke. Well, she keeps claiming she's a businesswoman, and say in the last 5 or 7 years, what businesses has she worked for? Also, when she says that we lost $3,000 in the last 4 years and blames that on Walker, the PolitiFact checks that she had to use 2010 as the first year of reporting, and they had lost $1,893 under the Doyle administration, and you take that out from the $2,743 that is reality, not $3,000 as she says, and it's a lot less. It makes it's barely $600-$700 basically, that $800 that was lost, not a pittance, but certainly not anywhere near $3,000, and most of that is due to the Doyle the last year of Doyle.
Well, most of it is due to national trends here, too, don't you think? If we've done one show, we've done many of them on this rising gap between those who have a lot and those who don't have very much. And in real dollars, all of us, no matter where you're living, have seen our paychecks really shrink when you compare it to what we used to make in the 1970s. We've all lost money, and we've lost a lot of money.
Yeah, I think, you know, I forget the exact statistics, but the median family in the United States before the recession, you know, was making something like $55,000, and now it's down to closer to $50,000. So, you know, I think Republicans, if you want to use those numbers against President Obama, you know, I mean, people can throw them all around. But I would think that, yeah, these are – I don't think that the president bears responsibility for the recession. People can criticize him for it being slow and making arguments that it could have been faster. But it is true that, you know, I mean, this is a nationwide – this is a nationwide thing where, you know, the average family, the average household, in terms of, you know, dollars that they're taking home,
right,
is a lot worse off today than they were back in 2007.
Yeah. And a lot less than they were making comparatively in the 1970s. Jim, thanks very much for your call. Margie in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I totally disagree with your guest statement about how you know, Act 10 hasn't affected the schools, but I have family in Racine and a son that teaches at one of the Racine schools, and I can tell you that lifestyle for teachers, at least in Racine, has changed dramatically. And I also work in the community and talk to many teachers out of the New Berlin district, and they've had some horrendous morale and assignments and financial changes. But Racine, I'm closer to, and it was awful what happened. Not only the decrease in their income, but what Walker did to vilify teachers. My family was getting hate emails from friends that, you know, they were posting on Facebook all these things about bad teachers, and they'd say, "Hey, you forget I'm a teacher? Well, you might be one of the good ones, but blah, 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 blah." And those few years were dark and frustrating and very mean. And it bothers me to hear you say that because you obviously haven't gone to all the spots.
John.
I've not gone to all the spots. My question is, I mean, I would be happy to take a look closely at Racine, but why isn't Mary Burke making that argument? Why isn't Tom Barrett making that argument if it was stand scrutiny? Why are the Democrats in the state of Wisconsin running zero ads right now about what Walker, you know, did to education? Why is it all about taxes and the minimum wage and jobs, and they're not even wanting to make an argument about education? You know, Kenosha faced 212 teacher layoffs, but again, they were in the same boat as Milwaukee. The collective bargaining agreement had signed before Walker took office, and it lasted until June of 2013. So there are schools that have been hurt. I'd have to look and see the specifics of Racine. In 2010, in Milwaukee, 482 teachers, you know, lost their jobs in Milwaukee public schools, and that was before Walker even took office. So you can't blame all these budget problems just on Walker himself. There's things different on district to district. And what Walker did, and what I would argue, I mean, if you want to Google my article to see my argument, it's called Walker's Vindication, Weekly Standard, August 1st, 2011, where I most laid out why I think that it was a good idea and it worked, is that, you know, before you had, when you had collective bargaining, people don't even really, bargaining, what does that mean? It means people can come together as a group. Well, yeah, it means that the union negotiator can veto any changes if they don't like it. And so the incentives are always for the union negotiator to say, I give zero changes. I'm going to keep my benefits exactly where they were on health care, even though we have a $0 copay. And I understand that teachers feel they negotiated for this, and that's what they were entitled to. But if it would make more sense in some cases to make a small adjustment, keep everybody employed, that's what I think Act 10 did, and it's been a success, and that's why I don't think the Democrats are making this an issue at all.
I think there is some validity to Margie's comment that there's this anti-teacher sentiment which doesn't serve anybody at all because we're all raised, informed by our teachers. And there has been a lot of that in the state of Wisconsin. I think she's right about that.
No, I don't know. I haven't seen that. I mean, I'm very, very thankful for all my public school teachers. I have family members who are working in multiple school districts. I'm sure some of them are probably not voting for Scott Walker, and I'm very thankful. I don't think anyone should take it out on teachers. People can debate civilly. And, you know, I think that the counterpoint would be people would argue, you know, conservative Republicans would argue that it was not, you know, it was people who took over the Capitol that made this that vitriolic, people who were screaming and yelling, and, you know, Walker has had death threats and things, and so things have gotten really nasty, and shame on who's ever doing that. If people are, you know, doing that to Democrats or Republicans, it's wrong. You can have different ideas about whether Walker's budget plan to balance the budget was a good idea or a bad idea without calling people, you know, stupid or evil or mean or anything. People can just, you know, debate things differently, and you settle your differences at the polls.
Yeah, 2 weeks from tomorrow. John McCormick, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
John McCormick, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, a conservative magazine and blog, and he is, as you heard him say, from Wisconsin. So it was an interesting, sorry everybody, we just didn't have time. We have more Facebook comments if you want to leave a message on Facebook. We're 2 weeks before an election, and it's always fun to read about politics and what you're thinking about things this close to going in to vote. So leave them on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this show, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from NPR, and we'll return and talk about going beyond this phrase that we've heard so much, this work-life balance. So that's coming up hour two of our Monday program.